This is 5x5, a podcast from the Frontier Master Executive Council. 5x5, the podcast for the ALPA pilots of Frontier Airlines. We hear you loud and clear.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of 5x5, the podcast for the ALPA pilots of Frontier Airlines, where you are heard loud and clear. I'm your host, Jason DeVerney. I apologize that we didn't release an episode last month. We did produce one, and it will be released as part two of this episode. Most of this pilot group's not been here long enough to experience a contract cycle, which is a crazy thing to think about. I'm actually one of those guys here in the flesh over four airlines, and I've never been on property for a Section 6 negotiation. Every pilot hired after 2018 has never been involved in negotiation with Frontier, or for that matter, Indigo. So there are a ton of pilots here, just like me, who this is their first contract cycle. We really need to take some time and have an educational discussion, exploring some of the historical aspects of our previous negotiations, including the things that have been important to the Frontier pilots over time. We have to understand the mistakes that were made in the past, the times we achieved wins, and we have to understand the things that have been tried before that either worked or didn't work. When I talk to pilots, and when I hop online and read postings, I see people proposing ideas asking, well, why don't we have this in our contract? Or why didn't we try that idea? As a group, we can look to our previous negotiations as well as negotiations at other carriers and see where various ideas have been tried and where proposals simply didn't work. We need to have an understanding of these historical moments so we can understand where we're going. Now, this is me primarily teasing the next episode, but I'm sure we'll discuss this a lot today too. I think you need to understand what has happened through history in order to secure the future. I want you all to become familiar with our negotiating committee as we continue down this road. My hope is we'll have a better understanding of how the information is gathered and processed, how the negotiating committee understands the desires of the pilot group, and how they can bring that forward. Like I said earlier, there are a lot of pilots of this airline that have never been through a negotiating process, and I hope you leave this episode understanding how much your negotiating committee relies on the voice and participation of you, the pilot group, especially what tools they will use to hear from you. We'll now get to hear directly from the pilots to negotiate for you and what they're currently working on leading into negotiations. They've been really busy. Even this episode has been incredibly difficult to schedule. So I'm grateful they were able to sit down with me, and I look forward to your feedback on this. Here we go. On the call with me today is Jim Lally, Negotiating Committee Chairman, as well as Gary Meshach and Mark Manassa, Negotiating Committee members. Guys, welcome to the call.
Hey, how's it going, Jason?
Yep, thanks for having us.
We just had the MEC elections, and you all have been reelected to the positions that you're currently in. Only one of you, though, has served on a previous Section 6 negotiation. What have you been doing leading up to this with LOAs or other agreements, whether it was a Section 6, maybe under some other committee? And I think it's best to start with Jim to kind of give us a highlight of his time here at Frontier as well as his position on the committee.
Yeah, sure. I was hired in March of 2004. The first thing I volunteered for was a grievance committee. Actually, that was under FAPA prior to the switch that we made to ALPA. That was for about a year, March 2015 to March 2016. I was the grievance committee chair. In March 2016, we'd started a transition from FAPA to ALPA. We were doing a bunch of things at the time. We basically were switching representation. We had started our early opener. So it was a busy time for us. There was a lot of stuff we had to get done. And we were new to the process. So in March of 2016, I was appointed to the negotiating committee. I was just a member at the time. I became the negotiating committee chairman a little over a year later in June of 2017. And I served on the committee until we received our TA, which was in, that was October of 2018. After that was done, I served on the implementation committee, which is an important part of the process. The contract was done, but making sure that the provisions are implemented. That took about 6 months to get that done. After that, I was a member of the joint PBS working group, the alpha half of that committee. We were basically charged with negotiating LOA 19, which was the PBS LOA. And then, as you said earlier, I was just re-upped to the negotiating committee chairman for the upcoming Session 6. That happened at the MEC meeting in Tampa a few months ago.
Great. Thanks for that. How about you, Gary? What's been your involvement?
Sure. I joined Frontier in August of 2015. During the last round of negotiations, I was actually a member of the grievance committee. I sort of started my time on the grievance committee negotiating hotel-specific settlement. Later, I helped negotiate the closing of all open grievances in late 2018. This allowed us to implement CBA 2019 with a clean slate and no open grievances. During the period in which Jim was on the implementation committee, I actually served as the first officer representative for Council 167. And then later I was elected onto the negotiating committee in February of 2021. I served on the negotiating committee from February 2021 until now. We did start the initial processes of beginning to negotiate a transition and process agreement with Spirit Airlines when the merger was announced in February of last year. Obviously, that ultimately ended up not occurring, so we've just been focusing largely on internal work and prepping for the next round of bargaining as a member of the negotiating committee recently.
And Mark?
I was hired in 2013, right before Indigo came on the property. We were still under Republic at that time, but right before that transition. So I started working with ALPA and actually it was still FAP at that time, about 2016. In 2017, I was elected to be the FO rep. We had transitioned to ALPA and was elected to be the FO rep for 165. That was during our Section 6 negotiations. So I had the opportunity to serve as a direct status rep through that process. When we got the contract in 2019, we had opened up the Las Vegas base and that had become its own council shortly after that spring, and ended up being the captain rep from 2019 until 2021. It was maybe probably a little before that I started thinking about this cycle that we're about to go into and how we could prepare for it and how I could get involved to be part of the team that was going to be involved in the direct negotiations. So decided to throw my name in the hat for the negotiating committee in 2021. And we've been working on the, you know, obviously the Spirit stuff and the preparations for this cycle since then. In another life, I was part of an organizing effort at Lynx Aviation when we brought a union onto the property. Ultimately, that carrier at Lynx got absorbed into Republic and the Frontier and Midwest merger. And I worked on the negotiations for the seniority-less integration, which is how I made some great relationships with people here at Frontier.
Yeah, well, Mark, you bring up a really interesting point. Being a LEC representative, as we go into negotiations, how important is it for the pilots at the local level to engage with their representatives, and how does that get passed along to you on the negotiating committee?
Yeah, so I mean, the LEC meetings is really the best way to engage with directly with the association. That is from a bottom up organization. That is the most direct way you can engage. And the way this structure works, essentially, we work for the MEC, the representatives, which are elected by the pilot group. I think being a former LEC rep, it gave me a unique perspective to be just outside the tent where the negotiations were taking place with the negotiating committee, and being adjacent to that, you know, is what inspired me to want to step inside the arena. But it also gave me that perspective of this is what needs to happen for the reps to understand what's taking place, and for the reps to be able to communicate that to the pilots who are the ones asking the questions of them. So I think the real clear need, I think, was this communication, right? This open line of communication and trust, where the reps feel comfortable with the negotiating committee, and negotiating committee has this ability to communicate with the reps, so that information, when they're engaging with the larger pilot group, is being communicated. And I. Not to get into the weeds too much, but last time we started this process under FAPA and we transitioned to ALPA, right? So there wasn't all this preparation that we've done this time. We didn't have reps in the same way that we do under this ALPA structure. We were sort of building the train as it was rolling down the tracks. And this time we've got more time. We've built these relationships together. We've spent time together. You know, I served as a rep with many of the people who are reps. And we're just better prepared as a group, I think, this time around.
Jim, you mentioned earlier, and Mark kind of talked about as well, with this transition from FAPA to ELPA. And it's my understanding as a pilot that wasn't on property that time, that that was happening during the actual negotiations. Can you kind of explain the structural changes as well as how preparation and sequencing of events and communications and all these things that we're going to see moving forward, how that all changed moving from the FAPA setup to now being fully implemented with ELPA?
Sure. Yeah, I think it's important to reiterate what Mark said. I mean, under FAPA, FAPA ran differently than ELPA does. Don't want to get super into the weeds on that as well, but I would say there's a lot more accountability under ALPA than there was under FAPA. So FAPA was a little bit different because the president, the vice president, they were directly elected by the pilots. We had a domicile chair and vice chair, which is different than ALPA. Basically, the pilots elect the reps, as Mark said, and then the chair, the vice chair, all the committee members are appointed by the MEC. So I would say there's a lot more oversight. The reps have the ability to go ahead and make corrections if things aren't happening the way they believe they should be. As Mark said, we were making the transition from FAPA to ALPA, and there was a lot of stuff going on. I mean, having going through this a complete time, I'll certainly say that there are things we could have done better last time. I think that part of that was because we were trying to make this transition in representation as well as going into Section 6.
Mark, do you have an opinion?
Like, Jim can speak better to what he saw on the inside, but you know, from my perspective, the entire structure of FAPA to ALPA was a different transition, right? We were bringing in some real leaders from ALPA National, some people who had really done this before. We had some outside expertise that was coming to the table. We were starting to build the structure of reps, but all of this was happening while we were already opened up, while we were in Section 6. So, you know, we had a committee that had formed under FAPA, was now operating under ALPA. Obviously, we handled that the best we could, but I think at that time, not everyone had a complete understanding of how ALPA worked, how it ran, like what the culture was of ALPA. And so we, you know, we're hybriding these things. And now here we are, we're fully immersed in that culture. We have people who spend a lot of time at ALPA National. Yes, we still have the culture of FAPA. We still have some of those things, especially in our contract, but we are now a different group. We have all these people who are new to this property, but sort of the best of the old and the best of the new brought together.
I would say, too, that some of it, at least with as things operate under ALPA, has to do with the fact that we truly are supported by a large pool of resources. So we can make sure that as we go into negotiations as an ALPA carrier versus as a FAPA carrier, we are fully supported by everybody who works at Valo and really anywhere from ALPA. So, I mean, we have economic and financial analysis people. We have a legal team that both makes sure that we're represented for negotiations and then equally is represented to still be able to process disputes and grievances and make sure that we have the bandwidth to do that. And it's possible because we have this large pool of resources that we share with other ALPA carriers that make us ultimately successful in that. And then the other thing I would say too is that, you know, is truly in it. And again, I was only involved with the FAPA a very limited amount of time during the transition process since I was a 2015 hire, but you know, ALPA is truly a ground-up organization. It starts at the LEC level. Individual members provide feedback to the reps who set the direction of the negotiating committee. And every interaction that individual members have, whether it be through surveys or polling or darts or direct conversations with reps or engagement at meetings, set the direction of what the negotiating committee does and what the final agreement supported by staff ultimately looks like to make us as successful as we possibly can be in the end result.
Yeah, I think that's right, Gary. And the one thing I would add on to that, too, is I think there's been a big change in our committee structure. I mean, we did have some rudimentary committees set up under FABA, but for the most part, they didn't exist the way they do today. As an example, look at R&I. We have a very robust R&I committee right now that's retirement insurance, and we didn't have anybody last time. So as we were putting together proposals, we were relying a lot more on ALPA staff and people that had been through this before, whereas this time, I feel like we could spend a lot more time reaching out to pilots, reaching out to the RNI committee, and making sure we put a proposal together that that makes sense for the entire pilot group. One of the things that we really tried to focus on going forward is making sure that the pilots' voices are going to be heard a lot more.
Yeah, that's all good. I really do appreciate all of you guys' input on that. I keep hearing the term early opener. Can you explain what amendable dates are and help set the timeline for pilot expectations? I think Gary's ready to jump on that one.
I can take that question. So we are amendable January 16th of 2024, but we have an early opener clause in our CBA, which allows us to open 180 days prior to that, so we can commence bargaining on July 20th of 2023, again, 180 days prior to our amendable date.
Does the company have to comply with that?
If we serve them with an early opener on July 20th of 2023 in just 3 months here, then yes, they would need to begin bargaining sometime shortly thereafter.
Well, one thing that I see, whether it's online or if I've had some conversations leading up to this, and I've had a few people, and I think it's because of the timer involvement in the industry, wonder, why don't we have professional negotiators on the team? Can one of you kind of handle for me how that's a misnomer and what sort of support, as you talked about this big pool of support that we received from ALPA National, does that involve Jennifer Bunkers, AJ Lindell, our local legal team? Who do we have nationally too that helps us, and can we consider them a professional negotiator?
Yeah, sure. Let me take that one if you don't mind, Jason. So we do have professional negotiators. We work with Bruce York, who's been negotiating contracts since the dawn of time, it seems like. But basically, he works with us. He worked with us last time. We also have, as you mentioned, Jen Bunkers and AJ. We have the R&I department. We work with Marin. We work with Rishi Patel. He's in ENFA. So we have access to a lot of these people. The thing that makes us a little bit different is we also have contractual provisions that vary from airline to airline. So while it might be easy for someone in R&I to compare DC contributions or percentages of health insurance that an individual pilot group pays for, it's different when you start talking about scheduling provisions and stuff like that. So that's why it's important to have a combination of pilot negotiators who know the contract that we work under day in and day out, as well as professional negotiators like Bruce. And there's other ones. It's not just Bruce. We've worked with Art Luby, Jeff Lasel. There's a whole bunch of people in the representation team that we work with. But that's why it makes more sense to have a combination of professional negotiators as well as pilot negotiators in these talks.
Now, as negotiations begin, it's not necessarily just the three of you sitting around a table talking to the company, right? We've got the staff support, but you also, I was in a membership meeting not that long ago, and we were being pinged on, what do you need from us? So you guys were asking our committee what sort of changes you'd like to see, the issues that we've seen, changes that we wanted from us. I don't really know quite how to expand on it at this point, but I know that you're reaching out to committee leads. How do they come into play through the negotiating process?
And so I think it's really important to realize that these committees are the experts on their different areas, whether it be R&I, whether it be communications, whether it be HIMSS, any of these small pieces, these are the experts, right? And I think we realized that there are things in our contract, things in other contracts that they directly engage with on a day in, day out work cycle, right? They're seeing the effects of the contract in their work. And so I think it was really important for us to reach out to them and hear from them. They engage with their peers at other airlines that also work on the same committees. So they're learning about best practices. They're learning about contractual provisions that exist other places. And, if we can take that feedback and present it to the MEC, ultimately the MEC is going to just set the priorities. But I think it's if we can write the report and present it to them so they have the best information, that was sort of our idea for reaching out to those people and getting their input on what we can do better or what the contract can do better to help them in their work.
Yeah. And one thing I find interesting too is some people, I feel like the negotiating committee is looked at in an odd way. I hear concerns about people. are they going to focus on their individual desires? Essentially, that's the best way I can take it, or individual political beliefs, or whatever you might want to say about that. Where do you guys draw your inspiration from? Who's directing the negotiations? And again, outside of the committees, even, how are you getting that involvement from the pilot group to you? Do your own personal beliefs affect what you're going for?
I guess I can take this one, Jason, if that's okay. I will say that I had mentioned earlier that I was on the grievance committee in a hotel specific role, but I didn't mention was that I was hotel committee chairman. So to say that I may have an opinion or two about what should be in section 5 of the traveling expenses section of the CBA is, of course, I'm going to have an opinion or two about what's in that particular section. But there's been a lot of things that have happened since I was hotel committee chairman and relinquished that role to our current hotel committee chairman, Jonathan Green, about 2 years ago. I need his expertise and his opinion on what should be in Section 5 as we look forward to the next round of bargaining, because I think something that every single pilot is super familiar with at this particular point in time is that the company has chosen to transition hotel vendors from API to TAC. So I may ask Jonathan, now that you're operating in this different environment under this different hotel sourcing provider, what specific needs have changed since I was familiar with the process to what's occurring today? Also, we take direction from the MEC. So we are continuously evaluating polling results. We are going to be opening a survey very shortly here, an all pilot survey where everybody can input their opinions and what they would like to see in the next round of bargaining and give that information to the MEC and the negotiating committee. So we're analyzing all that information, whether it be from DARTs, again, individual pilot engagement at LEC meetings, surveys, polling, the MEC reps themselves, the SMEs, any source of input for information that can go into this entire process. We are continuously evaluating and making sure that even though we may be up to speed in a particular area, that information continues to be relevant and what we want to consider as we look at this next round of bargaining.
Jim, right before Gary jumped in there, it looked like you had something you wanted to say as well.
Yeah, I was just going to kind of reiterate what he said. I mean, ultimately, as Gary did say, we work for the MEC. The MEC works for the pilots. And basically, we look at, we're trying to find all the vehicles available to us to make sure that we're hearing what the pilots are looking for into this next deal. We did a scientific poll that we just finished a couple of months ago. That was something that we heard a little bit about. Pilots were saying, hey, why wasn't everybody polled? And I just like to take a second to talk a little bit about that because I think it's important. We did this poll and we're getting ready to do a contract survey. Those are two different things. When we do scientific polling, we really want to get very exact data. So the way the scientific polling is set up, I believe the data is 96, 97, 98% accurate. And that's really important because we're trying to look at a bunch of different metrics within that polling. That polling is very expensive, but it's also very important information.
I wanted to make sure that we addressed it. I saw a lot of pilots in that survey. Stuff was going around saying, are 500 pilots surveyed enough? And what I found interesting is in the first episode, I'd spoken directly to Alan Christie and we released that. And we had 1,000 listeners on that episode. Alan spoke directly to how the scientific process works. And the fact that I believe it was him that said he believed that the smaller number that was initially requested or recommended from the polling agency was much smaller than that. And he proposed, well, let's make it larger. Let's make it 500 so that we get better pilot involvement. Really going above that doesn't do anything for us in the way that survey was structured. So it sounds like 500 pilots is enough. Alan's spoken about that. You've brought that up. But everybody wants to make sure that their voice is heard. And it sounds like there's more things coming that will allow pilots to voice their opinions.
That's correct. What we're working on right now is a comprehensive contract survey that every pilot will have the opportunity to fill out. That's going to be related specifically to contract improvements, whereas the polling talked about confidence in management, confidence in the MEC, how good of a job management's doing, how good of a job the MEC is doing. This survey is going to relate specifically to contract provisions. And There'll be a combination of, you know, multiple guests. There'll also be opportunities for pilots to go in there and just say their piece. I mean, free text and tell us what you're looking to have in the next contract. But we want to make sure everybody has this opportunity. Now, we'd like to have, we're gonna implore pilots to fill this out, because the more pilots that fill that survey out, the more scientific that data is. I believe the number is somewhere around 65% is the minimum we'd like to see to truly get a scientific cross-section. However, if we get fewer than that to fill the poll out, that's still information we want to have. That's something that we didn't really have an opportunity to do last round. We did a little bit of surveying outside of our scientific polling, but again, because there was so much happening so quick, we didn't really have the time leading up to Section 6 to get that stuff done. So that's something we're trying to do this time, to make sure that all pilots' voices are being heard.
Yeah, and it obviously sounds like a big ask, and Gary, I'll let you continue, and perhaps you can answer this. I have a feeling this is probably not a very short survey. It probably has quite a bit of detail to it. I haven't seen it, so I'm just guessing. But what sort of homework would you like pilots to do beforehand, before they receive this? What should they be thinking about before they actually sit down? And do you have a time allotment that you think they should sit down to invest into the actual answering of the poll?
Yeah, sure. So we are going to be in the coming weeks here releasing a contract comparison. It's going to be a large comprehensive contract comparison that compares our contract here at Frontier to the contract in other ALPA and non-ALPA large jet carriers. So we'd like the pilot group to, everyone here at Frontier, please take that document, review that document. Take at least a week. And then after we've allowed the group some time to review that document, we are going to be releasing the all pilot survey. Again, all pilot survey, like Jim said, is going to include several sections of the contract as well as large text fields, so pilots can input their individual thoughts and anything they'd like to see in the next agreement and communicate that directly to the MEC and the negotiating committee. And I just like to highlight, as we continue to go through this entire process, as we negotiate the next collective bargaining agreement here, there's going to be opportunities to continue to engage via polling, which is going to be a cross-section of the pilot group. It may be 500 or 600 or however large we are as we continue to go through this process and to get the correct number for the data to be considered scientific. But we will, as we go through this process, continue to release both polling and surveys at intervals through this process.
Now, I was listening to a bunch of different airlines podcasts today in preparation, and I guess to hype me up for this super exciting conversation. JetBlue has some sort of, when they were negotiating, some sort of website login, something like that. It may be similar to the DART system, and I'm not sure, where they were able to go in and send essentially a one-way message. Like there was no result from, or no input from the negotiating committee expected to come back. But are we going to have some sort of tool outside of polling and surveys, these really structured events? Are we going to have things where if something pops into a pilot's mind in that moment, they can hop on, go to the DART system, go to whatever it might be that we set up, so that you can get that feedback as we continue through this process?
Yeah, I would say for us, the DART system is the best way to do that. We have an email as well that you can see on the ALPA site that comes directly to us. But the nice thing about the DART system is the DARTs go to all the reps as well. So it's a great way for them to make sure they're seeing all the issues that the pilots want to address, as well as the negotiating committee. The officers get it as well. So it's a nice distribution list. So for us, we would say that we'd prefer that people use the DART system if issues like that come up.
Okay. A few months ago, when the idea of early opener started kind of coming into conversational tones, I was online and I saw someone explaining negotiations relating to a pie. I'm kind of curious, how do we bake this pie? Do the ingredients change? Does the volume or the size of the hypothetical pie, does that change ahead of time? Can we expect to see a bigger pie? Can you guys kind of explain all this to me?
Yeah, if I could start with this one. So we do hear that a lot. It's an analogy that people use to try to go ahead and just understand what we're getting ready to go into. There is no predetermined pie that makes up this negotiation going forward. And if I could point to our last negotiation, we were literally adding to the value of our deal right up to the last second of negotiations. We received an additional 3-point increase, year-over-year increase, as well as, I believe it was $15 million in signing bonus. So that literally was the last two items that we closed out. So ultimately, you could look at the contract as it exists today and say the value of the contract is X and that's the pie. But as we go through the process, there is no predetermined pie that we can point to. I mean, pilot expectations are higher than they've ever been. You see the deals that are getting done in other airlines. That's what we're looking at going forward is what needs to be part of this deal to go ahead and get a ratified deal that the pilots can be proud of.
Yeah, I think it's incredible. I look at some of the recent numbers coming out and there feels like there's massive disparity looking at, say, the Delta contract. When I see their full maturity on that contract, I mean, I look at ours. Their 12-year first officer makes exactly what our 12-year captains do as of the most recent increase that we saw through our CBA maturity date in March. How much did these other airlines, their increases in compensation, inflation, everything we're seeing right now, how much does this come into play? And then as other contracts are signed into play, as we're negotiating, do we get to take a look at those and kind of reevaluate where we are in the industry and where we need to be competitive, to frankly grow the airline and provide a great quality of life for the pilots here?
Yeah, I mean, the answer is absolutely. I would say, going back to your first question, Delta got their new deal. So we're basically at the trailing end of the pattern, which is a good thing for us. I mean, the large legacy carriers set the pattern and we negotiate off of them. That's kind of the point of pattern bargaining. We saw a similar thing last year last cycle where our rates were significantly behind everybody else. And in that negotiation, our rates increased significantly. There were some things we certainly had to fix. I mean, slope has always been a big issue for us. And it's something that we've heard from the pilots is very important this next negotiation, something that we plan to address. As the other airlines continue to get deals done, we'll absolutely be looking at that. It further solidifies the pattern of where we are going forward. And those are all things that we need to address. I mean, as I just said before, the market for pilots is as good as it's ever been. I mean, pilots are truly a commodity right now. And if the company wants to go ahead and capitalize on its plan to grow and become the super ULCC, they're going to have to go ahead and be serious about this process and be serious about this negotiation.
And the thing that, you know, I think is really important is that, what kind of airline do our pilots want us to have, right? We want to have an airline that's a career airline, right? And a career airline means that your expectations from start to finish are comparable to those at other carriers. I think our pilots, our reps and us, we're focused on that slope. We've seen the way that the company behaves and the way the company thinks about it. They're happy to pay an industry rate at the end of that 12-year pay scale, but they shop that discount in the middle there because they have an expectation that people will move on and transition away and go do something else and get the discount in the meantime. But for a career airline, for pilots who are here for the long term, like that's just not going
to
work.
I think it was Gary that mentioned being on the grievance committee prior to stepping into this role. Did I get that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, excellent. You look like you wanted to continue on that, so I'll let you, and then I've got another question for you.
Yeah, I don't know if this is helpful or not, but I just want to make sure that you did mention at the beginning of this podcast that there's a lot of this group that this is their first time going through Section 6, and especially with Indigo. And for some folks, this may be even their first airline jobs, for those coming straight out of some of the ATP programs or what have you. So I just want to make sure, as we talk about slope, to make sure that everybody knows what we mean when we talk about that. And that is the percentage increase sort of as you work your way through the longevity steps on the pay scale. So the percentage increase from 1 to 2 or 2 to 3, you'll find that at larger legacy carriers that tends to be a little bit more flat. Where at Frontier, there can be, for example, 11 to 12 year captain is quite a significant jump on a percentage increase as you move from that longevity step 11 to year 12.
Can I just add to that, though? I think when you look at the more kind of mature legacy contracts, historically, contracts are basically negotiated off a 12-year captain pay. So you negotiate a rate, 12-year captain pay, and then everything else is a percentage of that rate. And that's kind of where this slope discussion comes in. So if you say, as an example, and I'm making these numbers up, first-year captain pay is 90% or 95% of 12-year captain pay, you can see you'd have a fairly flat slope. If you say first-year captain pay is 50% of 12-year captain pay, now you have a steep slope. And the same thing would hold true as FO pay. You say, okay, 12-year captain pay is X. At 56% 12-year FO pay is the start of that slope. And then going down to, let's say, second-year FO pay, which might be 40%. So ultimately, what we're trying to do, I mean, we're trying to address both of these issues. The flattest slope in the world is not going to do us much good if the pay rates are way below the industry average. However, if we have a great 12-year captain pay rate that's right there where Delta 321 rates are, that's great. But it's not great if our slope is steeper than Mount Everest. So we're trying to address both of these issues. We're trying to flatten out the slope, and we're trying to make sure that that 12-year rate is in line with the rest of the industry. And then basically the percentage of 12-year rate versus, let's say, 6-year captain rate versus second-year captain rate, as well as the FO scale, is all in line with percentages at other carriers.
Yeah. Isn't it fair to look at other major airlines and directly compare our hourly rate at 75 hours to their rates? We fly the same jet. We carry more passengers. We're responsible for more ground issues due to lack of support. Don't we at least deserve the same?
Yeah, of course, certainly. As we look at Section 3 compensation hourly rates, we are ALPA pilots. We fly Airbus jets, and we should be compensated as so.
Well, I got you, Gary. I'm curious, we've seen a lot of grievance stuff happening. What changes are being contemplated for contract compliance to make sure that whatever we have written into rule in our contract is actually complied with in the next contract?
Yeah. So again, this is something that we're going to continue to look at where the industry goes. The minimum number of opportunities we have in a given calendar year to be in front of a neutral arbitrator. Right now, currently under Section 20 of our CBA, we have 4 opportunities to arbitrate on a given year. As we look forward to the next round of bargaining, we will look and see where other carriers are, what do they do to encourage compliance under their CBAs, and is there anything that we can sort of take from them to incorporate into our own CBA.
We can negotiate the best contract in the industry. It could exceed everyone's expectations, but as long as we don't have compliance, like, it's not going to be worth anything, right? Compliance is really critical in whatever, wherever we end up in, through this process. So I think the reps understand that. I know the pilots understand it, and we understand it too.
Excellent. Thanks, guys, for digging into that a little bit for us. We are 2/3 the size of Alaska, and will likely be equal to or larger than them toward the end of our next contract. If things are go the way that, or if it continue to go the way the company forecasts, and I mean, I certainly hope happens, we're 2 times the size of Hawaiian Airlines. We saw these carriers achieve large gains in their new contracts. How is pilot group size taken into account moving forward? Does that even matter? I mean, we're all ALPA carriers, right?
Yeah, we are all ALPA carriers, and it doesn't matter. It's the company likes to try to point out that we're a ULCC or we have to handle things differently because we have a different kind of market plan. That's just not the reality of the way things work. I mean, we are narrow body, mainline, Airbus pilots, right? And that's the way we expect it to be compensated as well, to be treated. Airline doesn't get a discount on gates. They don't pay less for fuel. That's not the way it works because they're a ULCC. They pay the market rate for all those issues, and they're going to have to do the same thing with the pilots going forward.
Can you explain the importance of scope protections, especially related to successorship, mergers, subcontracting, small jets, co-chairs, alter egos? These are all things that we need to be concerned and aware of, right, as we move into this next round?
Yeah, I'll start. Section 1 might not be the most exciting section of the contract to read. I mean, it's funny when the contract comparison comes out or a new TA comes out, pilots usually race right to Section 3 to look at the pay rates. But I would argue that there is no more important section of the contract than Section 1, because you could have the highest pay rates in the industry, you could have the best work rules in the world, but if the company doesn't exist, what's the point? So we did make some improvements in our last Section 6 on Section 1. That's something that's high on the list of priorities to continue to address going forward, absolutely.
Look, and I think there's no other real-world example of this that's occurred recently other than the merger with Spirit that almost occurred just a year ago. Again, the process in which we began to negotiate a transition and process agreement, and then how we negotiate a joint collective bargaining agreement, and even how our seniority lists are integrated if we do potentially merge with another carrier, is all defined in Section 1. Those are important protections that for those folks who are listening that have been around for at least a year, they can see why those individual provisions, again, all contained in Section 1, not the super attractive Section 3 where people go to most, but those are our job securities. Those are what protect frontier pilot jobs that should be most important to folks. They all live in Section 1 of the CBA.
And specifically for me, I was at an ALPA carrier that started an alter ego airline, and their contract did not protect them. I was part of that Lynx Midwest Frontier Republic merger that took place, and I saw what happened to the Midwest guys who their scope provisions weren't what I would say fortified in the way that would have helped them. So I think for us, specifically me, I think Section 1 is very critical piece of our contract. And while it might not get the marquee lights, without it, it can be real problematic.
We obviously can't negotiate in public, but it's important that the pilot group hears from the negotiating committee, hears from their reps and all of that as we go through this, especially to keep rumors under control and to make sure we're going down the proper path. In what ways can we expect transparency from the negotiating committee to the pilot group and keep us abreast of the status or direction of negotiations?
Sure, I'm happy to start on that. So we're currently working on our first negotiator newsletter. For folks that haven't been here for the previous negotiation, you can actually go on the ALPA site, that's frontier.alpa.org, under committees and negotiating committee. And you can see we have all of the negotiating newsletters from last Section 6 archived. And the reason I bring that up is you'll see there's a tremendous amount of information that we put out to the pilots through our negotiator newsletter. And we intend to do the same thing this time. We are actually, we just finalized our first negotiator newsletter, which will just kind of lay out what pilots can expect over the next 90 days. So we're planning to follow up in about a week with just a kind of an overview of the RLA and Section 6 process. As you mentioned earlier, Jason, there are a lot of pilots here. I mean, roughly 50% of the pilots on the list right now were not here during the last Section 6. So we want to make sure there's a place they can go to kind of read what to expect over the next however long this process takes. After that, we plan on putting out the contract comparison, which Gary mentioned earlier, and then we're going to start with the survey. And as we get into this process, we will be using that negotiator newsletter every time we have a session and every time other issues come up that we want to communicate to the pilots. In addition to the comm that we have, our first comm coming out, we're planning to do a series of airport sits. That should be just about the time we're getting ready to go into our early opener. And that's just going to be giving pilots the opportunity to speak with us one-on-one, let them know what they can expect as we start meeting with the company. And as we get further and further into the Section 6 process, that's what we expect to continue to do. Keeping the negotiator newsletters coming out in a regular cadence, be available to the pilots for one-on-one conversations. And as we mentioned earlier too, we appreciate darts. Throw a dart. We're happy to get your information. We'll call you back. We'll respond via email. But we want to keep that line of communication open. We think that's the best way to go ahead and promote transparency.
Yeah, and yeah, I think the pilots can just simply state it. Sorry, my apologies. But the negotiating committee will issue factual communications after each bargaining session over the items that were discussed at each session. And that's super important. Anybody who saw that as we went through this process the last time around can expect the same thing as we look at this next round of bargaining. And for anybody who's new on the property, that's what you can expect us to deliver as we continue to work through this process.
And just one thing I really want to add is and reiterate is that if information is going to come directly from us, right? There's no insider knowledge that was going to leak out. We have a discipline at the table. We have a discipline as a group. We're going to communicate directly with the reps, and we're going to communicate directly with the pilots. I talk to a lot of, you know, I have people I'm very close to in my domicile that I'm friends with and have personal relationships with. They're not getting the news first. So it's not going to appear on social media before it appears from us. It's going to come straight from us when it's first released. It's not coming out any other way.
So when I hear that Mark's buddy Todd has got some juicy news on what's going on in negotiations, I should discount it?
Please do. And I'll talk to Todd. I mean, those guys are listening right now on this podcast, and they know they don't get any insider info. So, yeah. Hey guys, how's it going?
Yeah, I'm in the dark too, guys. The last question I have for you, I guess part of this conversation is there's an expectation that needs to be set. And in the next podcast, or at least one that's really in close sequence to this one, you kind of teased already a little bit. There's an expectation of how pilots are supposed to perform. We have a status quo. When things open up, things are supposed to continue exactly the way they were. We're going to talk a lot about our behavior. So in two different tracks here, behavior of pilot group, individually and as a group, frankly. And as far as reaching out, if you can just drill in one final time, what do you need from the pilot group? How do they get their voice heard in a way that doesn't put frontier pilots at ELPA into any kind of difficult position during the negotiation period?
Yeah, of course. We are going to ask you to please review a contract comparison and then complete an all-pilot survey. There's going to be additional rounds of polling. There's going to be family awareness events. There's going to be LEC meetings. There's going to be pilot unity building, pub events. There's going to be a lot of things coming up. There may be informational picketing at some point in time. Any of those types of things, when we call upon pilots, we would ask that you participate actively in those calls to action. And again, as you're at work, please just continue to conduct yourself in a professional manner.
Just one other specific thing to add to that. At some point, we're probably going to release lanyards, have those out for the pilots, and we ask people to wear them, right? Like it's a way to spot your fellow Frontier pilot across the terminal. Those things usually have some way of standing out, and it's a sign of unity and support for the negotiating committee, our work, and for the association as a whole. So if it's those little things that we can do to stand together that really give us our strength. But believe it or not, if the pilots are all on the same page and we're all pulling on the rope in the same direction, that really is what is going to help us get this over the finish line.
And if I could just add on one last thing. I mean, to keep it short and simple, our ask right now is stay informed, right? We're going to put out communications. We ask you to read those communications. And the importance of a unified pilot group cannot be overstated. You're going to hear that from us over and over and over again, because if we're unified as a group, we will be successful in this process. If we're not unified as a group, we won't. It's that simple. So please stay informed. And as Gary said, as we move into this process, we'll stay unified and work together as a group to get this contract done.
Thanks again, everyone, for giving this episode a listen. I really hope you have a better understanding of the negotiating process and those who negotiate on your behalf. I really do appreciate all the pilots that took the time to throw me a dart since the last episode. Your input helped me write questions. It helped me decide direction in this conversation and for future episodes coming up. Please continue to throw me those darts. Help me understand what it is you want to hear in the show. Next month, I'm sitting down with the PBS committee. I'm sure there are a few opinions on what you want covered in that episode, so I look forward to seeing your input. Now, over the next few months, you're going to be receiving an increase in communications, just like you heard in this episode, from the MEC, including the negotiating newsletter. They're working really hard to make sure that you're kept in the loop throughout this process. If for some reason you're not receiving emails from ELPA, please, as always, throw us a dart. You're going to be receiving soon the pilot contract comparison documents, followed by the all-pilot survey mentioned earlier in the show. Please take the time to study these. Maximizing pilot participation and building unity in this process is absolutely paramount for successful negotiation. We mentioned in-person events a few times today. The best place to find these events is on the official ELPA calendar located on frontier.elpa.org/calendar, or even easier, in your ELPA app. You just go to My MEC, My Pilot Group, and then MEC Events to find that calendar. In the coming weeks, there's quite a few opportunities to engage with the union representatives on a one-on-one basis. Currently, here's what we have planned. The first one, unfortunately, you're not able to RSVP. All tickets are sold out for this. But just to let you know what's going on, there's a really fun family-centered event next week put on by LEC 167 and the SPSC up in Philly. It's Tuesday, April 25th. They're providing tickets to go see the Mariners versus the Phillies at Citizens Park. For those of you in the Denver area, LEC 165 is going to be hosting a pilot unity building and family awareness event with the help of SPSC as well. Pilots and their immediate family members are welcome to attend the event at Elitch Gardens Theme Park on June 5th. This is at 12:30 Mountain Time. If you're interested in going to this, please make sure that you register for the event using the calendar link. Toward the end of June, the pilots in Las Vegas can look forward to an airport meetup at Rudy's Diner, located in the D Concourse. The meetup begins at 6 p.m. Pacific time on June 26th, and then you can meet them again at 10 a.m. on the 27th. Pilots in Denver will have three opportunities to attend meetups as well. You're going to find these at Mesa Verde in the A Concourse on June 28th at 5:30 p.m., June 29th at 6 a.m., and June 30th at 6 a.m. More meetups are scheduled in Orlando on July 7th and 8th. They're both starting at 6 a.m., and you're going to find them at On the Border, which is within the airport. And the final meetup I see on the calendar is July 9th in Philadelphia at Chickie and Pete's. This one starts at 8:30 in the morning. Of note, our next MEC meeting is scheduled for July 11th. We really hope to see you in attendance at these events. Please bring your questions to your LEC and MEC members. Your participation is incredibly important as we prepare ourselves for negotiations. Please remember to be distrustful of rumors. Always question that inside scoop, that thing you heard from a friend of that guy who knows that other person. Instead, go to these pub events and the meetups, attend your LEC meetings, and engage with your ELPA representatives. Please take the time to share this episode on social media, text it out to your friends. I would really love to see the reach of the show increase. We got about 1,000 downloads from the first episode, which is really encouraging. I'd love to see that number grow. To subscribe, to be automatically notified when these come out, a lot of apps you can actually set automatic download settings as well. Please search for the full title of the show as you see it up the top and click subscribe. If you're having difficulty finding it using a search function, search for Frontier Pilots, add that in, or just search for it on. That tends to make it easy to find as well. With this, you'll be notified every time an episode's published as soon as it goes live. And again, this is in every podcast app to my knowledge. If you're not finding it in your app, please throw me a dart and I'll be happy to look into it and see if we can get it on that platform as well. We're going to have another episode coming up shortly highlighting the RLA and how it governs pilots' negotiations. I'm Jason DeVerney. We'll see you next time.